Ladies and gentlemen, and everything in between, welcome to episode 269, I think it is now, of A. Thompson and Other Disappointments. Pull up a pew, grab yourself a beer, roll yourself up a fat bifter. Whatever it is that you need, that you desire, that your body yearns for, to help you make it through, I was going to say another week of this tumultuous, hugely troubling country and world that we live in, but it could just as easily be whatever you need to make it through another hour of this nonsense. Welcome. Let's get into it, shall we? Do I need to do the podcast admin, or should we just jump straight into it? Big stories this week, I suppose, are the big one, party politically speaking, is Liz Truss, isn't it? Liz Truss has got a new book out. I don't know if you've heard about that. It's quite exciting for Liz. It's the first time that Liz Truss has spoken in Parliament this year. £86,000 a year they're paid, aren't they, to represent their constituencies at the parliamentary level. 86 grand a year. And that doesn't even include the money that she gets as an ex-prime minister. You know, however brief that tenure was, she was a PM for like 40-odd days and she was kicked out, but she still gets the prime ministerial kind of pension thing. That deal carries on forever. So she gets 86 grand a year and the prime minister money. And yet this is the first time this week that she's bothered to show up to speak in Parliament. Happens to be the exact same week she's got a book out. So, how about that? I'm sure it is just a wild coincidence, guys. I'm not knocking it, right? I think if you can get that gig, if you could be paid 86 grand a year to not show up to work, I just hope that they remember this same thing, her vibe, the next time her and all of her Telegraph columnist chums go on about worklessness and work-shy Britain and and lazy girl jobs. I don't know if you guys have seen the Opinionista corners of the right-wing rags recently, but lazy girl jobs are their new sort of buzzword. It's all sort of stemmed from, was it a Liz Jones article or was it a Alison Pearson or, I don't know, Jan Moyer? So it's one of them, one of the toil-brimming bitches of Eastwick. You know, it's one of them. One of them was going on about like how they were in a park and they overheard a girl talking about her work situation, and she, you know, she takes Fridays off, or Fridays she clocks off at like 2 and doesn't do anything. And then she's actually working on a side project and she's trying to do this. And, you know, it's a lazy girl job because she's trying to be a YouTuber. Oh, my God. God forbid. And now they refer to them as lazy girl jobs, right? If you're on a certain adult flavored platform and you get your girls out, right? People pay you £20 a month for that sort of, you know, subscription-based adult content. They got to find some way to demonise that, haven't they? They got to find some way for that to not be a proper job, or to make it not real, or you should be... How dare you do that? How dare you do that and not be drenched in shame? You should be working in Starbucks for minimum wage. Terrified how you're going to make it through to the next month. So yeah, this is whole lazy girl jobs thing now. And I just hope that the next time they're babbling on about that stuff, we remember Liz Truss. We remember Elizabeth Truss, who didn't come to work for months. Anyway, so yes, she's shown up to Parliament finally today. Because today is a vote is happening, right? It's a smoking ban. Rishi Sunak's government, or at least, you know, some of his government, is that a lot of talk there might be kind of mutiny and voting against your own government and all that stuff. Rishi Sunak's government are seeking to make it harder for these kids today to take up smoking. And Liz Truss has decided this is a subject that's close to her heart, you know? We don't need to go through the other, like, litany of votes and bills and stuff are very important things that she probably should have shown up for and reflected the sensibilities of her constituents up in North Norfolk or wherever on earth it is, that is hopelessly, irredeemably Tory. You know, all of those other votes that she's missed, those subjects are apparently not close to her heart. But this she has to show up for in the week of her book release, guys. And a lot of people are saying, you know, they're mocking her, right? Outwardly mocking her. Because here you have a failed prime minister by most metrics. You know, here is a woman who coasted into number 10 off the back of largely racist Conservative Party members who just couldn't stomach the possibility of a man of South Asian heritage taking the reins. So they were like, well, this woman is not that. And also we get to have a Thatcher Wank fantasy. So win-win. Let's get her in. So she's questionably legitimate in terms of even arriving in number 10. Then she has the shortest tenure, I think, of any prime minister in the modern era. I think it's like she comes in and she leaves. So, again, questionably legitimate. And then you've got what she actually achieved in that time. I mean, she basically killed the Queen and the economy. So, yeah, I don't hesitate too long to say probably the worst political leader that I've ever seen. And, you know, I'll hold my hands up and say I'm not necessarily a scholar of all things politics, but I struggle to think of a worst prime minister over the last, like, 20, 30, maybe 50 years that I'm aware of. But anyway, here she is with this book. With this 10 years to save the West nonsense, which also serves as something as a memoir, so I'm told. I haven't read it. I'm not reading it, all right? I refuse to give £20 or however much it is to Liz Truss's publisher and stroke that ego. I can't bring myself to do it. I'm not saying I would never buy a book by a Conservative Prime Minister. I might do. I might be interested to see what the other side, as it were, think about this and that and the, you know, the things that they considered when they reached certain... Like David Cameron's biography or autobiography. I would consider maybe reading that. Maybe. But Liz Truss's, I'm not so sure. You know? I feel like with Liz Truss, you wouldn't get... Like, part of the draw of an autobiography is you get an actual understanding of the reality that that person was inhabiting at that time. With Liz Truss, I actually think it probably belongs in the fiction section, you know? I think she might go down in history, firstly, as the woman that crashed the economy, secondly, as the shortest tenure of any prime minister in the modern era, but also as the first ever woman to write her own memoir and have it immediately recategorized as fan fiction about yourself. So, yeah. Liz Truss has got this book out this week, and it's the first time she's spoken in Parliament this year. But I'm positive it is just a coincidence that those two things are happening at exactly the same time, guys. Sure of it. But yeah, anyway, she's catching a lot of flack because the excerpts that were published in the Mail over the weekend and the few like little tidbits that have worked their way onto Twitter, little screen grabs, and her interviews that she's done to promote this thing, they don't suggest, well, they don't illustrate, if that's the right word, a woman who is entirely in touch with reality. I mean, she had an opportunity at one point, right, to leave office and then to, you know, a period of silence, a period of reflection, and to then come back and hold her hands up, right? And if she had said, look, I honestly thought that lowering taxes would work because we did a bit of modelling and we thought that the money that it would go back into people's pockets would come out in the wash, sort of thing. You know, like 3 or 4 months down the line, 6 months, a year. According to our modelling, we thought the VAT receipts and the extra holidays people would be buying and the more expensive cars they might upgrade to, we thought that would come back to the exchequer in tax receipts, and actually that would manifest as growth. We thought that, but we got it wrong. And I'm really sorry about that, guys. I got a bit carried away with all of the Tufton Street ideology. I was led to believe this, and I am sorry about it. And if I could go back again, I would do it 100% differently. I promise you. And I think there's a lesson that we could all learn here in terms of getting a bit carried away. And it breaks my heart now when I see the impact on mortgages that people have still got to pay as a result of those decisions then. And all I can say is I'm sorry. And hopefully this, me holding my hands up, will serve as a line in the sand for other conservatives to get off that crazy train and actually try to help people. But she had an opportunity to do that. And that would have been a complete reset for the Conservative Party, wouldn't it? But she chose to go through door B. She looked at that and she was like, well, there's probably no money in that one, right? I mean, what kind of career could I forge for myself post-parliamentarily speaking if I admit fault? If I say, oh yeah, I'm the idiot that crashed the economy and I'm really sorry about it. Who's going to hire me then? Steve Bannon won't want me on there talking about the deep state if I acknowledge that it was all my own fault. No. Much, much easier to blame it all on this ambiguous deep state, global left, activists, institutions. And so, yes, she's caught a lot of flack for doing precisely that. Turns out, according to Liz Truss, it wasn't her fault that the economy crashed. According to Liz Truss, and indeed her cheerleaders, this morning and yesterday afternoon, it was not Lizzie who caused your mortgage to explode. And I'm speaking from experience here, okay? My mortgage before, I'm sorry if you've listened to this a million times, but for the benefit of new listeners and people who have jumped on my threads over the last few weeks, and now you're finally checking out the podcast, my mortgage went from £1,100 a month to a new quote of £2,000 a month, an extra 900 quid lumped onto my outgoings. Who's to blame for that? Apparently not Liz Truss. According to her, according to her cheerleaders, Liz Truss didn't crash the economy because, and wait for it, this was my favourite one I saw. This one came out this morning. Let me see if I can find it. Here you go. This is Atik Rahman, who is a conservative solicitor. Okay. He says, Liz Truss did not crash the economy. Bank of England sets the interest rates independent of government. As Liz said, if you believe otherwise, you're either stupid or malevolent. In Rachel's case, I am struggling. That's in response to Rachel Reeves' thing. But just focus on that for a minute. This is a solicitor, right? So his whole job is to take in this and that and then formulate arguments to win over a case. That's his job. His profession. That's his wheelhouse. And he is going with Liz Truss did not crash the economy because the Bank of England sets the interest rates independent of government. That's his defence of her. Remind me never to enlist Atik Rahman as my solicitor. If I ever get in trouble legally, Atik Rahman might not be on my shortlist of great legal minds to consult. because Liz Truss did not crash the economy. Okay, I think what he's saying, okay, and it's not just him, by the way. Really what he's doing there is he's sort of, he's taking from this Liz Truss interview in The Telegraph where she says, the people who claim I crashed the economy are either very stupid or very malevolent, right? That's, she's saying that, and then he's sort of repeating it or paraphrasing it, right? And I think what they're saying is this. They're saying, Liz Truss, what she did was she cut everyone's taxes, right? But then, unfortunately, the outcome of cutting people's taxes when you don't show you're working is that the OBR are like, well, we can't give our seal of approval to this. And then the markets start to panic because they're like, what is this government doing? So the markets start to sell their bonds. And then all of these high street banks start panicking. And they're like, well, hang on a second. Like, if the bonds go south, well, and then they start to anticipate that the Bank of England will raise its interest rate. So they raise their interest rates. It becomes a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy. And to say that Liz Truss is not responsible for that is basically like, if you want an analogy for it, it is like somebody saying, well, I didn't burn your house down. I never set fire to your house, though, did I? All I did was start the fire seven houses down from you. You know, it's not, I didn't burn the whole street down. I just started the fire. That's his get out. What a solicitor. Incredible. And look, I don't want to spend the whole thing talking about Liz Truss today. Because God knows she's gobbled up enough column inches and coverage on the mainstream outlets. I don't want to spend my entire time on my little independent punk rock show ranting on about Liz Truss. But I will just say this. I'll just share a couple more thoughts with you about Liz Truss of late, if you like. I think it's... I mean, look, right. So she's getting a lot of flack because she appears to be so deluded. We don't really know at this stage if she genuinely believes that she didn't do anything wrong and that she was on the right path with it, and that all of these institutions were just conspiring and working against her. We don't know if she genuinely believes that. I sincerely doubt it. I don't think she believes that. I think it's more cynical. I think she believes that other people are stupid enough to believe her when she says all of that stuff. It's the age-old question, isn't it? We always ask and have asked many, many times on this show is, are they really this stupid or are they just hoping you are, right? I don't think she's that stupid. I think it's cynical. So she's catching a lot of flack. But I do think she is in some ways a force for good in this country, in this world, dear listeners. And maybe some of you might be bulking as I say that. Maybe you were listening to this. You were sort of vaguely on board with most of the things that I'm going on about, ranting about. And then I say Liz Truss is kind of ish a force for good. And you're like, what? But hear me out, guys, because here's the thing about Liz Truss. Yes, you could say she was hugely incompetent. Yes, you could say she's cynical and opportunistic. And yes, you could definitely make a case that she was overpromoted. She never should have been the prime minister in the first place, and she only ever really got there because of institutional racism. You could say many, many, many more things other than that, and all of it would be true, and I would fully celebrate your right to do so. But we should also consider, guys, Liz Truss's place in history as a shining, unparalleled beacon of an example of Great Britain's commitment to forgive and forget, to just move on. Everyone deserves a second chance in the formerly Great Britain, don't they? At least that's how it seems, right? I'm just saying, if you mess up, guys, if you really mess up, it could be worse. You should be able to move on. You should get a get-out-of-jail-free card at least once or twice. Everyone gets a second chance. I don't care if you cheated on your husband. I don't care if you're living in a house shared with two or three other people and your responsibility is to get everyone's rent money into the account. And then actually what you did is you drew out all the money, everyone's rent money. How much is rent in London now? It's like £900 a month for a room in a house share. You drew down every, like, £2,000 or £3,000 and you blew it all in the bookies. And you won. You won in the bookies and then you blew all of that on drugs and booze next door in a terrible East London pub. I don't care if you messed up that bad. If you accidentally had one too many brandies and came onto your niece's friend at the barbecue, I don't care how bad it was. Everyone should get at least one or two second chances. If Liz Truss can nosedive the entire economy and send people's mortgages doubling and just walk back into Parliament, talking all this crazy stuff about low tax ideology and the deep state, and people still take her serious. She's still invited on LBC. She's still on Good Morning Britain. If people just look the other way and let her get on with her business, I'm just saying, they could at least give you the benefit of the doubt for drunk driving that one time. Guys. I mean, I was thinking about this earlier, right? About how weirdly similar Liz Truss is to Dan Wootton, you know? Like, on the face of it, they're not that similar. Obviously, she's a woman, he's a man, she's British, he's Kiwi, I think, isn't he? She's a politician, he's a TV presenter and all that. But they do both exhibit exactly the same behavior or conduct versus their shame. Do you know what I mean? It's like Liz Truss tanked the economy, and we all know that she did that, right? But her get out of jail free card, her sort of ego protection device, if you like, the way that she's still able to go on these talk shows and pretend like she's someone that we should actually bother listening to, is for her to come out with this stuff about the deep state, about the globalist left, as though it's, you know, undefined, ambiguous institutions, shadowy figures, conspiracies. That's what happened to her. It's not her incompetence. It's this ambiguous force in the background that can never really be defined or nailed down. That's Liz Truss. And then you've got Dan Wootton, right? Now, Dan Wootton, we don't really know the extent to which he was doing, you know, X or Y. We know there's this whole thing about Martin Branning. We know people have accused him of some fairly horrendous stuff. We know he then launched legal action against some of the parties that accused him of the stuff. But we also know that when, right, at the height of those allegations, you remember when he went back on GB News and he said that it was dark forces. Do you remember? He said, like, look, he had had some behaviour in his past that he wasn't particularly proud of. And he said that events of late had taught him the kind of person that he wants to be, or the kind of journalist that he wants to be. I remember that stuff. But then he also said, but I'm being attacked by dark forces, or something along those lines, right? And it's the same thing, whether we're talking Liz Truss or Dan Wootton, right? It's the same thing. It's like they get caught out, or allegedly caught out, and then their defense mechanism, the way that they're able to then re-inhabit the places that they used to inhabit before the scandal broke or before the economy nosedived or whatever, is they then allocate those scandals or the allegations of those scandals or whatever on dark forces, globalist left. It's a conspiracy. Ooh, but it's all shadowy and smoky and I can't quite put my finger on it, you know? It's fascinating, isn't it? How these dark forces are taking down all these figures. They're very powerful, these dark forces. and yet nobody's ever seen them. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? They remain immensely powerful, these dark forces. Very powerful behind the scenes. And yet nobody's ever seen them. Are the dark forces Liz Truss? Is that what they are? They never show up to work, these dark forces, and yet they remain strangely powerful. But yeah, I was thinking about the similarities between Dan Wooten and Liz Truss. And it doesn't just stop there, you know? It's like, there's a lot of talk about dark forces, obviously. But it's also, it's interesting to see how they inhabit a place just between. It's couched between acknowledging that they've done something wrong, right? There's just enough of that there. And then on the other side, yeah, but at the end of the day, it wasn't my fault. Like, it's concurrently something I show a bit of recognition and reflection on, but also I did absolutely nothing wrong. I don't know why you're all so upset. Like, it's incredible that you can inhabit those two spaces, but they find this little window in between those things. With Liz Truss, if you've watched any of her interviews or read any of her interviews in the last 6 months, she acknowledges that, you know, mistakes were made, in quotes. She says, you know, in hindsight, perhaps I moved too fast. I tried to do too much too quickly. It's that sort of language. And then in the same breath, she's like, but I would have got away with it too if it hadn't been for you meddling OBR, the IMF, the United Nations, the Supreme Court. It's like always the fault of an institution out there. She is both someone who recognizes that she made mistakes, and also, I didn't make any mistakes. I was taken down by the globalist left. Like, how can it be those two things at the same time, Lizzie? So that's her deal. She inhabits that space between those two things. And Dan Wooten did the same thing. You know, in that first show back on GB News, he said, he had made mistakes in his, you know, when he was a younger man. But then he was like, but I never did anything illegal and blah, blah, blah. And, oh, it's made me think, you know, the kind of person that I want to be. And but it's like he inhabits a space of recognizing that he's made mistakes, that he doesn't want to live that way any longer, but also fucking dark forces, isn't it? Oh, no, these dark forces again. It's ingenious, really, isn't it? It's like giving you just enough of what you want to hear that this side are like, oh, okay, all right. Well, she sort of-ish kind of accepts it, whilst also giving herself enough wiggle room to maybe make some sort of political comeback. You know what I mean? I mean, there's a lot of people who think that she might try to go for the leadership again, which is just like, I mean, I'm not ruling it out, Ian, you know? I've got unfinished business. That's what she said on LBC. I've still got a lot of unfinished business, Ian Dale. Like, I heard that. I watched that clip. I was like, oh my God, unfinished business. You've got unfinished. That was just round one, was it? I may as well just go back to renting now. Anyway, what else has gone on? What else is happening out there in the formerly Great Britain, in this dystopian world in which we now live, guys? Because I didn't want to spend the whole one, you know, talking about Liz Truss. Donald Trump, I suppose we could talk for a minute about Donald Trump. He's currently restricted / confined to a courtroom. And this is the Stormy Daniels case, right? He used campaign finance money, allegedly, to pay off an adult film star whom he physically enjoyed, allegedly, again. And you're not allowed to do that. If you take donations in American politics and it goes into your campaign finance coffers, you've got to spend it on leaflets, you know, glitter, whatever else it is that, you know, a load of American flags and, you know, vote Trump, text this number to that. All these facilities and campaign tools and stuff, that's what you spend the money on, obviously. And he got his lawyer, allegedly, to fix it for him, Michael Cohen, this guy's name. And Michael Cohen got jailed for lying under oath, I think. And he has since flipped and turned, not informant, but like government witness. So he's testifying against Donald Trump. And this case is the first one where the judge is like, I want to see you in this courtroom every single day. And Donald Trump is like, this is an outrage. I don't want to. You want me to pitch up every single day? He's basically Liz Truss, but for American courtrooms. All right. It's amazing, isn't it? All of these rich, wealthy, conservative types, why have they got such a problem with showing up? Where are they all so desperate to be? You know, like, have you got an Epstein Island? You need to be out or something? Like, is there another Epstein Island out there for right-wingers? You know, well-connected, right-wing millionaires and millionairesses. And somewhere out there, there's two empty chairs. They're like, where's Donnie? Where's Lizzie? Lizzie had the smoking vote, did she? All right. What about Donnie? Donnie's got the court case, hasn't he? Oh, man. Oh, he's going to be bummed out. He really is. Yeah. Yeah, you know, we got those two 15-year-old Swedish girls who look just like his daughter. Yeah. Oh, wow, that got dark. Anyway, so yes, he's in an American courtroom. He's got to be there every single day. And I mentioned this on this morning's paper review a little bit. Back in January, he had another court case. And he really didn't want to be there, but he had to be there. And he came up with this line about his mother-in-law's funeral. And there were journalists at the time who were like, he's never even met his mother-in-law. Do you think his mother-in-law likes him or liked him? You know, knowing that he was off gallivanting around with adult film stars while his wife was pregnant with Baron Trump. You think the mother-in-law likes that guy and wants him at her funeral? Baby, he said to the judge, he was like, I have to be there. You know, it's my mother-in-law. She was a great woman. It's breaking my heart. I don't know if I'll ever get over it. I definitely need to be outside of the courtroom and at this funeral. It means so much to me. And he was granted the leave. Like, he did get to go to the funeral. And you know what he did? He immediately went off to the campaign trail and did like a rally afterwards. And now, like, it's another court case. He's restricted to the courtroom. And again, he's coming out with this nonsense. He's like, it's my son Baron's graduation. I can't believe you would be so heartless. Can't believe you would be so heartless. Like, there's a Muslim ban and, like, kids in cages at the border. I can't believe you would be this heartless to stop me, Donald Trump, from going to my own son's graduation. And as I mentioned on the paper review this morning, people figured out in minutes that he didn't go to any of the graduations of his other kids. He's never been to any of their graduations. He doesn't give a fuck about his kids. Nothing. Nothing in there at all. Empty, just cold tar flowing through those veins. True sociopathy. But of course, all the MAGA lot, the family values Christians in the Church of MAGA, all they're upset about this. They're not having it, guys. They're like, how could you deny a father his right, his God-given right to see his son graduate from high school? Why would you do that? That is typical of Joe Biden's Democrat Party appointed judge, partisan, leftist, Marxist thug America. And really, it's an exercise in, you know, the post-truth era in which we live, isn't it? Because here you have clearly documented evidence of diaries that Donald Trump filled out back in the day. The days that his other kids had their graduations. Here you have pages in biographies, autobiographies, that talk about where he was on those dates or the absence of him at the high school ceremonies. And yet, the Magalot still run to this fake news thing, you know? Like, that's their only card they've got to play. It's like, yeah, I don't believe what you're telling me. Because Donald Trump said fake news one time when we were talking about something completely different. And now whenever anyone says anything about my orange Jesus guy over here, that's it. Ah, la, 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 fake news, fake news. It's incredible. Facts, dates, first-hand accounts of things. No, fake news. Fake. Did Donald Trump even tell you that it was fake? No, we've gone beyond that now, Aid. He doesn't even need to tell me any longer. I just tell myself it can't possibly be true because he's my hero. Because I love Donny. Here's a question for you, right? What does it take for Donald Trump's following in the US to subside? Because I saw a tweet from Otto English earlier where he said he doesn't think that Trump is going to win this time. And I really hope that he's right. But it could be a case of, like, you know, the people who shout the loudest are the ones that get heard. But actually, you know, the silent majority in this instance becomes, you know, actually sane people. Do you know what I mean? So it could be that. I hope he's right. But if he's not, right, what do you think it's going to take to wind down Trumpism in America? What would it take? Like, think of the most fervent, frothing lunatics that you see on some of these clips who are truly just deep in the Kool-Aid, right? Full-on Trumpsters. What would it take to get them to get off that bus? And I was thinking about this. I was like, if that was me, I think I would need to see him looking weak and frail. And I found myself wondering, like, is the reason, or is one of the reasons, that his team have worked so tirelessly to delay these trials and to not have him restricted, like, inside that courtroom where he can be observed all hours of every day, right, is one of the reasons. Like, we all know the main reason, right, is that the longer he delays them, he might become president, and then he can pardon himself for the majority of them, right? That's a big part of it. But is also another part of it is that if he's in that courtroom, we can see what he's like. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's fine putting him up on a stage for 2 hours, three nights a week. It's fine dabbing him with a load of makeup and shooting him up with whatever medication he's on, right, in front of the cameras, when you know that he has to be good at 11 a.m. until 12:30 that day. And then you could go back to sleep, Donnie, right? That's fine. Staged, managed Donnie or whatever. But when he has to be in a courtroom for 8 or 9 hours a day, and we know he's going to be in there, and adversarial journalists, observers, people who hate him, jurors, most importantly, everyone can see what this actual, in reality, 77-year-old man, is he, is like, and how fit and healthy he isn't, right? Like, is that a big part of this? Like, forget the mother-in-law's funeral, forget Barron's graduation. All of it is nonsense. They just don't want him in the courtroom where we could see how actually physically frail and weak he has become. Because that, to his following, who see him as like a strong man, as a bully, as a leader, that to them is fucking cancer, isn't it? And I think they know that. I think that's what this is about. And if you have seen the news coverage, right, from the last 24 hours, kind of makes sense a little bit, right? Like, have a look at this picture, man. Like, in fact, it's not really a picture. It's like coverage. But this is not an isolated, and it's in the Telegraph, right? So it's conservative press. And even they're saying, like, you know, Trump, quote, falls asleep in court. which is like, this is what I'm saying. He's no spring chicken. He's an old man. He goes on about Biden being forgetful and a bit doddery, and fine, you know, we can talk about that. But also, he's 77 and he's falling asleep in court. And of course he is. Because it's all very well, as I said, like, you could jack your granddad up on barbiturates or, you know, pharmaceuticals or, you know, whatever his prescription is for. You could give your granddad a couple of brandies at Christmas time and he's the life and soul of the party. But it doesn't mean he's a strong man and he's fit for leadership, as I think we're probably going to start seeing in old Donnie. I mean, here's what I hope happened there, right, is I hope that he took his seat, right, and he started babbling, just like Liz Truss, about dark forces, institutions, blaming it on this. Like, Liz Truss talks about, you know, the deep state and the globalist left. Donald Trump talks about the same stuff, but he talks about, like, radical Marxist activist thugs, you know, but it's all the same thing, right? He complains about weaponization of the Justice Department. She complains about the civil service. It's all the same stuff. It's all populist fantasy nonsense and lunacy. Anyway, here's what I hope happened with this. The actual true story that I hope took place is he's outside doing his mini press conference. It's activist Marxist thugs and weaponization. It's a sham trial. And anyway, then he gets in to the courtroom and there's the jurors and there's a judge and they're all, oh, can I get you some water, Mr. President? Like, and he's like, yeah, it's the activists and the judiciary, and, you know, just carrying on. And then he nods off. And then I hope the jurors and both sets of lawyers, they all look at each other, and the judge and the report, everyone just looks at each other and they're like, oh, thank God. Oh, good. You know, like a family at Christmas when your racist granddad finally nods off. And everyone's like, oh, thank Christ. Oh, oh my God. Did you see my face when he referred to Alex as coloured? Oh my God. And when he said he's got nothing against gays, but it's just when they mess with children. Oh, I was about to throw him through the patio. I was about to bum him in anger. I was like, no, don't wake him. Please don't wake him. Don't wake. If anything, put a couple more sleeping tablets in his brandy. We could all use a break. So yeah, anyway, I hope that's what happened in there. Or I hope it was even worse than that. I hope he was just babbling some nonsense and then his own lawyer was like, right, this is going to be a real tough trial. You're going to mess this up for yourself and for me. This is the most high-profile trial I've ever worked on. This could be a career maker for me and a book deal. I'm not going to let you mess it up. Spikes his drink with sleeping tablets. No? Like, this might be bad for your brand, seeing you as, you know, Sleepy Donny and all that. This might not work out for you. But for me, this is very much of net positive, net benefit territory. And I say that as somebody whose attitude and conduct and the way that I speak publicly has probably been of net detriment to other people professionally. And they've probably been sorely tempted to spike my drink with sleeping tablets. Like, you're gonna lose me my job in a minute, eh? Have two of these. Have a little nap. Maybe you'll wake up less grumpy and stop ranting about Nazis. Eight. I mean, I do like the idea that his lawyers might spike his drink, just send him to sleep because he's less trouble that way. I imagine him sort of arguing amongst themselves, like in his dream team of lawyers. Like, how do we get him to how do we get him to just stop speaking in public? How do we do? Oh wait, there's a vacancy soon, is there? There's a vacancy in British Parliament where they never expect you. It's basically like putting him into a black hole for months. Oh my God. North Norfolk, is it? Sign him up. Guys, that's it. I gotta go. Thank you so much for listening and or watching. If you're watching on YouTube, if you are enjoying these, do consider joining the YouTube community, which I have going. If you tap the three dots below, you should see like the sort of super thanks thing. You can leave a tip. there, or you can go to, I think there's a link in all of the episodes to the community thing, or join Patreon. That's super easy. It's like starts at £3 a month, goes up to £5 or £7 a month, I think. And there's different kind of benefits depending on what tier you want to jump onto. I'll be back Friday night, hopefully with a guest. I still need to confirm that they are going to be appearing. But failing that, it will be a, oh my God, I've got a little thumbs up thing again on my video. How strange. One day I'll figure out what it is that causes that. Anyway, that's it from me. Take care of yourselves. Keep it booge. Keep it hashtag Binfluencer. And I'm out this Mother Hubbard.